Women Worldwide with Deirdre Breckenridge introduces incredible stories shared by women across the globe who have experienced the great heights of success and, at times, the agony of defeat. With a vision to impart wisdom and advice on how to tackle barriers and soar to new heights, the show uncovers different perspectives to help you find your inner strength and to power up your own voice so you can excel in life.
Hi, everyone. I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Women Worldwide. For today's show, are you ready to power up? Well, I've got a special guest who can really help do this. I'm actually holding her book in my hand. It's called Power Up, How Smart Women Win in the New Economy by Magdalena Yashiel. And before I give the official introduction, just want to share a little bit about Magdalena. Not only is she the author of this fantastic book, but you may know her because she was the first investor and founding board member of Salesforce. So she has quite a tech history. She's a technology pioneer, a VC, and she's also the founder of Broadway Angels, which is an angel group of female investors. Magdalena has a very long resume. There were so many accolades. I could go on and on, but I really think it's important for her to share her journey with you. So Magdalena, it's a pleasure to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, I want to get to the book, but it would be so great to maybe have you talk a little bit about your journey to Silicon Valley. I mean, you've worked with so many of the world's top tech companies. Maybe you could share if this was what you had originally planned when you were starting out, maybe even going back to school.
So the reality is I really didn't plan any of it. I'm an immigrant to the United States. I came here to go to college. And like any kid going to college, I had absolutely no idea what was going to be happening to me or what I really wanted to do. But I did have amazing curiosity. I wanted to always be at the leading edge of whatever was happening, technology, medicine. I really didn't know. But one thing led to another, and the one theme that runs through my life is that when an opportunity presented itself, I was always willing to take the risk and step in. And that's really how my career unfolded. I ended up coming to Chicago my freshman year. Got too cold for me. And
I remember that in the book.
Yeah, it really was very cold. It turned out one of the coldest winters of Chicago. And I figured that California was warmer. So I ended up transferring to Stanford University for my sophomore year. And then when I saw the palm trees, I was sold. I studied, you know, I was pre-med at the very beginning, then switched to industrial engineering, and then ended up getting a master's in electrical engineering. Very worried about getting a job. And my advisor told me that, in fact, Silicon Valley was just down the street and anybody that I really wanted to work for was located right there. So my whole career it really is a reflection of how Silicon Valley developed. I started out in semiconductors as a semiconductor design engineer. That was kind of the hot area when I first graduated. And then as the industry moved from semiconductors to computer systems, then computer systems to software, then from software to online services, my career very much mirrored those moves. I always wanted to be at the leading edge. So I kind of went on to the next company and then on to the next. And at some point I became an entrepreneur because I couldn't find a job. So really, ultimately, it's now there was no grand plan. There was no grand strategy. It's just that, you know, I flowed as life took me. And I did have, though, the courage to be taking risks and trying new things. And if it didn't work, so be it.
Well, like an entrepreneur, your courage and curiosity definitely guided you. And you document a lot of your journey in your book, Power Up. And there are just so many valuable lessons in the book. Maybe you could share some of your favorite lessons or stories, and then I'll even share what mine is.
Okay, yeah, I'm very curious to hear which one you like the most. A couple of just very basic themes in the book. I talk about perfection and how that's our enemy. And if we are actually trying to be perfect, we're going to waste a lot of time and energy doing that extra 20% at the end, which is usually pretty irrelevant. That's a theme that I hope comes through. Another one is regret. I don't do regret. I don't think regret is a good thing. It's a waste of energy. And my goal in life is that I always look forward, not back. I mean, there are always learnings. And of course, through those learnings, you develop. But looking back and saying, oh, if I should have, I should have done that, or if I could have only done that, or I was so stupid. I mean, that is just wasted energy, and it takes away from our self-confidence. So that's another theme. The main theme of my life, though, is really flowing. And I talk about this ritual that where I am from, I'm full-blooded Armenian and grew up in Turkey, where we have this ritual as someone is leaving, not only family and friends, but all the neighbors show up with buckets of water in their hand. And as the person is departing on their journey, they throw those buckets of water behind that individual, basically to simplify, to symbolize an open road, mm-hmm. and always moving forward. And just like water, you know, when there's an obstacle, it just goes around, and water never stops. It always moves forward to symbolize that send off, you know, always may you flow forward. And I've used that symbolism, especially when I've hit big boulders, big rocks, and, you know, showstoppers. I've always told myself, I can flow around this. I might not get exactly to the point I want to get to, but I'll get somewhere else. But I just have to move forward. And that imagery has really helped me throughout my life and career.
That's a beautiful tradition. I just want to key into, you talked about the, you don't do regrets and the waste of energy. Do you feel that that is something that you see a lot in your experience with other women professionals, or is that something that could be across both genders?
Absolutely across both genders. I don't think that it's just a particularly feminine trait. Silicon Valley, I see a lot of regret. People who talk about, they should have sold their stock when it was at a high, or they should have joined that company when they were offered the job. You know, Silicon Valley, from the very early days, you never really knew who was going to be the big winner. You sort of had a hunch. But, you know, a lot of people bet on companies that we're not the big winner. And there is a lot of soul searching. Actually, I see more men doing it, partly because more men have worked in Silicon Valley than women. So I think that that's a trait. It's not a winning trait, mm-hmm. but it's a trait that is both genders display.
Well, it's kind of good to hear that it is both genders and that it's a trait that goes across, and we should all be soul searching, yet you're right. No regrets, because that is a waste of energy. I think my favorite story in the book was you were having a meeting, you were in the boardroom, and the meeting went on break, and you were continuing the conversation, walking with your male counterparts, your peers, and you continued the conversation right into the men's room. And it wasn't even like you blinked, you know? And that is so interesting. And I would love for you to share a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it's a funny story, because you're absolutely right. It was a very heated discussion, and we were taking a bio break. And it turned out that as we're walking down the corridor, I was making my point, and I was very passionate about it. I really wanted everyone to pay attention, so I was very caught in my statement that I was making. And as someone opened the door and they all walked in, I walked in with them, continuing to talk. And everyone's face kind of changed. And then I looked around me, and then I realized, oh, we're in the men's room. And I saw the urinals. And then I wanted to finish my point. So I did. I didn't like immediately, you know, leave. And then I went to the women's room and I was thinking, wow, this is really horrible because they're going to be continuing to talk about the issue on hand and I'm left out. I mean, I'm not hearing what they're saying. So when we all went back to the conference room, my immediate question was, so did you guys finish the discussion, you know, and what conclusion did you come up with? Because I wasn't there. And they like stopped and looked at me and they said, what are you talking about? All we talked about was the fact that you had walked into the men's room and you could care less. You were still making your point. You wouldn't even leave immediately. So they said, no, we didn't talk about the issue at hand. All we talked about was you, and we laughed. And the spirit of the room now in the conference room was so much lighter. And in fact, the discussion that pursued was much more productive.
Awesome.
But that's my story.
That's a great story because you didn't feel uncomfortable. You didn't walk out, you know, saying, oh my gosh, I went into the men's room. It was more, oh no, I don't want them to finish the conversation without me.
Like you wanted that's to exactly be, right.
Yes. Which I
had my priorities straight. I had my priorities straight. I didn't really care about the fact that I walked into the men's room. I cared about the fact that I was going to miss out on the discussion.
Exactly. Because it was an important discussion and you needed to be there. And that just says so much. So yes, that was absolutely one of my favorite stories. I'd love to kind of key into a chapter that you wrote in your book where it's called You Have More Power Than You Think, which, you know, I'm sort of thinking we all kind of have more power than we're tapping into. And maybe you could sum up the big takeaways in this chapter. And what does it actually take to develop this power or feel like you have gravitas?
Thank you. This is a chapter that I think it's incredibly important, especially with the amount of attention the Me Too movement has given the topic of sexual harassment in the workplace. And You Have More Power Than You Think basically says that if you're ever in an uncomfortable situation and you feel just like what's going on is not right, don't just let it happen. In fact, you have more power than you think to control the situation. Now, that doesn't mean that you can always control it. Mm-hmm. There are predators who have amazingly smart strategies that, you know, that basically trap you into situations. And in those cases, you absolutely should be reporting the situation. So even though you might have been a victim, just because you're a victim doesn't mean you have to feel horrible about what happened for the rest of your life. You can actually report and pursue a legal action if you choose to. There are ways of not necessarily getting back what you lost, but feeling like you actually have some power after the fact. But oftentimes that's not the case. Oftentimes it's innuendos. Mm-hmm. It's not that black and white. And I think that us as women often don't have the wherewithal to say, I can stop this right now and I should. And we sort of like let it go. We play along. We smile and laugh it off. And gravitas, the way I define it, is your seriousness and your focus on what's going on in the moment. And if you bring that to the workplace and don't actually go along when someone is making a pass at you, when someone's making you feel uncomfortable, when someone's making a statement or looking at you a certain way, if you don't let that just go, but actually take control of it and very clearly communicate, not in a negative or, you know, bitter way, but to say, hey, what you just said really doesn't go over well with me. I would like you to make a note of that, and in fact, not act that way in the future. If you say that in an authoritative tone, people will actually stop and listen. And most men don't want to be spoken to that way. So they won't really, most of the time, do it again. And I don't think that we do enough of that. I appreciate some people when I say this say, oh, you're blaming the victim. I'm not blaming the victim. I'm just saying let's use the power we actually have more often than we do.
Yeah, using your power. And I think you said in the book, or maybe I inferred it, somewhere along the line, you could even say, could you clarify, what do you mean by
absolutely
that statement? Like calling somebody out.
Absolutely. Yeah. In a very simple way. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like throwing cold water on someone's intention. And that works so very beautifully when someone has told you, oh, you look so spectacular in that dress because it accentuates your curves. You look at them with a very clear, you know, look like, wait a second, that I did not like at all. If you don't want to be really negative and say that, you can just say, please clarify for me what you just meant by that. And if you say it that way, mm-hmm. people are going to say, wow, she didn't like that at all. You didn't blame them. You didn't say anything negative. You just said, please clarify for me what you just meant by that statement. They will get the message very loud and clear quickly, most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time.
Interesting. I mean, it's one more way to have a commanding presence when you talk about gravitas as your focus and seriousness. I haven't heard it defined quite that way. And I think that what you're keying into is so important. Next topic that I found interesting in the book was your take on mentoring versus sponsorship or sponsoring someone. What are the differences? Which is more important?
So thank you very much for pulling that out of the book. It's actually, I think, very important. I draw a distinction between a mentor and a sponsor. And let me tell you how. A mentor for most people is somebody at the extreme, almost like a fairy godmother who is going to open doors, make introductions, help you find that perfect job as you navigate your career, basically give you advice that's always 100% right on. And let's face it, most of these mentors are not fairy godmothers. They are not there just to be benevolent for the rest of your career. People lose interest. They only have so much time. And in my mind, especially young women being told, oh, you have to really find a mentor for your career, is really doing them a disservice. Now, why do I say that? Because mostly people think that mentors are somebody outside their own company, somebody who is, you know, more ethereal and is going to be able to, someone of power is going to be able to make powerful connections for them versus a sponsor. A sponsor is someone who will win from when you win. They will sponsor you because they're going to get something out of it. It's actually a symbiotic relationship. It's mutually beneficial. So they have a vested interest in your wins. A boss is a very good example. A good boss makes a great sponsor because you are working for that boss. You're making that boss's, you know, star shine, and that boss will want you to do more of that, will want to empower you to be able to do more of that. So a sponsor is somebody who wins from your wins. It doesn't have to be just a boss. It can be someone else in the company, or it can be someone even in your industry, but they also have very relevant connections. They also have the right kind of power to be able to help you move forward, versus a mentor is someone who is kind of in the universe, but not necessarily directly connected. And oftentimes, there is not this symbiotic, you know, winning associated with mentorship. A mentor gives, doesn't really take back. What I'm saying in the book is when you're asking someone to give, see how you can actually benefit them, give back. Because we know in life, when both people win, those relationships are the most valuable and longest lasting.
Oh, definitely. So there is a huge distinction. The first time I had ever heard of someone sponsoring you, came from corporate America. My husband, who works at EY, he talked of sponsors. So, and I do hear, I mean, mentoring has changed so much because of social media. It's not even the same relationship that when I had a mentor years ago, I was meeting with my mentor or it was a weekly phone call. So I think your distinction is really important. And thank you. Thank you for drawing that out. The symbiotic relationship, that win-win, that's probably something that more professionals should be thinking about in their careers. And Magdalena, I'm just going to ask you to hold your thoughts for a moment. We're going to take a super quick break to give some love to our sponsor. I also want to mention that Women Worldwide is on the C-Suite Radio Network, and you can find all of our shows at csuiteradio.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out all the other great business podcasts as well.
You have been listening to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge. Segment 2 is coming right up.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communication and innovative technology. Pure Performance Communications works with businesses to move their audiences from awareness to action and impact by offering a digital marketing roadmap. Let us help you foster deeper engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com.
Now, back to Women Worldwide with your host, Deirdre Breckenridge.
I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. Welcome back to the show. Magdalena Yashiel and I were just chatting about her book, Power Up, How Smart Women Win in the New Economy. And she was sharing some of the really valuable lessons that have come from her career journey and that she documents in her book. Magdalena, I want to jump into challenges. Because the, you know, what you shared in the book from your perspective and even the women and the examples that you gave, would love to know some of the bigger challenges and how you overcame them.
Yes, and I'm happy to speak about mine as well as the 27 women that I interviewed for the book. The nice thing about this book is that we actually also talk about the difficulties we had, each one of us. That was one of the things I asked before I accepted someone as an interviewee. I basically was asking, are you willing to open up and talk about the hardships, the tough times, the horrible things that happened to you in your career and how you could actually pull yourself out? And I think that is very valuable because let's face it, life is just not a bowl of cherries. We have difficulties. Sometimes our difficulties last multiple years. And yet, just like the water example I shared earlier, we need to have the belief that we can flow through and we can continue even when we think we're down at the very dump, at the very bottom, but we will come back up. And that belief actually really carries you through. I've had multiple rough patches in my career, some of them much more than patches, where, you know, I was devastated. Probably the very first time that happened to me was when I was running at the very beginning of my entrepreneurship, when I was running a consulting company. And, you know, we were small. We had a handful of clients and we were a dozen people. And we were burglarized and all of our computers were stolen. And we were not, this is a while back where we didn't have the cloud. So we had not done a good job of backing up our hard disks. So we lost a lot of client information, a lot of the research that we had done. Our clients forgave us and they were very kind to us. They appreciated the challenge we had. So they didn't discontinue our projects. And we were able to recover because we had insurance, even though it was a great setback. We went and bought all new computers. And literally 2 weeks later, we were burglarized again. All the new computers were stolen. This time around, it turned out I didn't have insurance coverage. I hadn't done the paperwork between filing the claim and reinstating the insurance. So we were completely exposed. Our clients walked away, each one of them. And I had to lay off everybody and shut down my practice, my consulting business. It was truly devastating. It was truly devastating because I also happened to be pregnant with my first kid. And it was really bad. And anyway, and that was the beginning of a period where, you know, it was very difficult for me to actually get a job. And just navigating those very choppy waters, it was a very down time in Silicon Valley. We're highly cyclical. We go up and down. And just knowing that sooner or later I was going to survive, but having no idea how that would be. And that's an example of a time where, you know, it took me a couple of years to actually really get out of it. And I continued consulting. This time I didn't have staff. I was by myself. I went and got any job I could do. And because I wasn't getting the job offers, I actually really wanted to get a real job with a paycheck and not have to worry about, you know, going and getting clients. But that was not in the cards for me. I was not getting any offers, again, because most Silicon Valley companies were laying people off, not hiring people. And navigating out of that, I became an entrepreneur. And it actually opened a whole new chapter of my life I'd never dreamt about. I wasn't one of these people who wanted to be an entrepreneur in her career. I just wanted to have great jobs at great companies. And so what came out of it in hindsight was fantastic. But being down in the dumps during those few years was really tough.
Oh, it sounds tough. I mean, it's the road to character. How much you write, you learn about
Absolutely.
Yourself and how you move forward. That's an incredibly tough time. And, you know, but how look at the benefits. And, you know, as an entrepreneur, I'm sure, as you said, you never look back. And I'm sure life is very different with new but exciting challenges.
Absolutely. And I think the key is to have the belief that tomorrow, whenever that tomorrow is, it might be a week from today, it might be 2 years from today, but tomorrow is going to be better at some point. And never lose that belief, because the moment you lose that, you basically have given up. And caring, and that really is the bottom of entrepreneurship, the bottom line of entrepreneurship. It's believing that tomorrow is going to be better. You're going to actually make it happen one way or another. And the word that's often used is pivoting. You know, you change. You change and find the real opportunity if it's not right in what you're doing.
I feel like it's pivot and power up.
Exactly. Even though pivoting too often and too early is also not great, because
True.
Might not have given a lot of time to what you were working on. You know, you can't just constantly change and walk away from your first hypothesis. You have to play things out. But that's the balance. That's the judgment call of being an entrepreneur.
Right, and the focus. And, you know, you mentioned that you were pregnant with your first child. So, of course, it begs another question. Just in general, making motherhood and, you know, whether you're leading a company or working at a company, or your entrepreneur making everything work. And I'm just going to pull out a story in the book that stands out in my mind, because, you know, we have four kids and I could completely relate to something that you had said. You were, I guess you're in the car and you were overhearing a conversation, must have been between your son and his friend. And when kids talk, they act like nobody else is around. And they were saying something about their wives, and they're going to, you know, they're going to make sure that they cook for them. And it's one of those stories that we can all step back and relate to. So maybe you can share your take on this.
Yeah, no, it stays in my mind so vividly because I was so devastated to hear it. So yes, I was driving my son as well as this other kid, his best friend at the time, to a ski weekend. I was driving them. They were both sitting in the back, and my younger son was in the car as well, but he didn't have a friend. And the two of them assumed that they were in an autonomous self-driving car. they absolutely had no idea that I could actually hear everything they were saying just because I happened to be in the front seat. It was amazing. Right. It's like this, you know, I think they were probably 13 or maybe even 14 at the time. And it was a pleasure because I was, of course, eavesdropping on the conversation. But it stopped being a pleasure when they, when my son's best friend said, whose mother was, by the way, a very prominent CEO of a large, very successful e-commerce company at the time, and you know, probably in the top five women in Silicon Valley. And he said, you know what? I am not going to marry a woman who has a job outside the house. And I was like, just devastated to hear this because I know how hard this woman worked and how accomplished she was. And just to hear her son say that. And then just as if I wasn't devastated enough, my son chimed back and he said, oh, me too. I mean, it's just the quality of the food sucks. I want to marry somebody who actually cooks and does stuff for me during the day. And his friend agreed and they said, yeah, all these chores they give their mothers just don't get done on time. And so it's like marrying a woman like that is just like a non-starter. And it was really incredible. And there was a moment, and I must admit this, there was a moment I was, as I was driving, thinking, like, did I just blow it with my kids? Like, they'll never marry a professional woman. Like, I thought I was going to be a good role model and that actually, you know, model after their mother. And they just are talking about doing the exact opposite of what I do in what they look for in their spouse. I was just devastated. And then I realized, you know what? 14-year-olds or 2-year-olds or 20, maybe 18-year-olds, what they say to their friends shouldn't be taken as career advice by a woman at my age. I mean, I shouldn't be, you know. It's like, but it was very hard to differentiate that until I came to my own senses. And I said, no, this is not career advice for me. I shouldn't be quitting my job on Monday when I go back home from the ski trip. And, you know, I should just take this with a grain of salt. But it was a devastating, and I still remember it. And, you know, it was so devastating that I didn't share it with the other woman because I know how she would have reacted. Yes. And she heard it was just such bad news that I just let it go. And here I am years later, and I work with my with that very son that made that comment.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We have a startups together where we're co-founders. So don't quit on your 2-year-olds or your 14-year-olds' comments about your career. Those are not to be taken as career advice.
That's really good advice because if you think about all the comments over the years, where would we be?
Exactly.
Right? You got to take them in context. Do you feel that just in general that we just somehow naturally make it work? Is there anything that can be said to women professionals? Is it more lean in approach? What is your take overall?
Well, my take overall is get all the support you possibly can. Actually spend time making sure that you have the support. Let's face it, child rearing is a full-time job. Having a career is a full-time job. Trying to do two full-time jobs is impossible. So you need to, you know, first of all, get the support at home, whatever that means. For me, it was living with my mother. My mother actually lived with us and was the mother at home all the time until the kids were 8 and 10. And that was really what made my career possible. I always say that and give her credit for it, because she put my mind at ease so that I could, at the drop of a hat, take a red eye to New York for a meeting or Washington or whatever. And she gave me that kind of freedom. That was the enabler for my career. So you might not have that luxury of having a relative live with you, but having a spouse or a partner who's willing to take as much of the responsibility as possible. I say we're not going to have equality in the workplace until we have equality at home. Because us as women, if we take on a ton of the responsibility and not share it with whomever the partner is, we're never going to have the same level of freedom in our career, because we will have this other full-time job hanging over our heads. Now, having said that, many single women have approached me mm-hmm. and have said, hey, we're single parents. We don't have a partner. What are you talking about? And I really respect that position, because I know the reality of it, not firsthand, but I've watched my friends. And in those cases, I say then you have to really find the support system. You know, it might be your best friend, it might be your neighbors, it might be your church, it might be your social group. But you have to share the responsibility of child rearing. You cannot be doing it alone. And if you do, it's going to be really difficult to have both a successful career as well as a successful child rearing experience. So learn to seek those support people out and give them the responsibility. Don't try to keep it all yourself.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. We talk about our support system in business. It's the same support system in your life. And I was a solo mom for a while after my first marriage ended, and my parents weren't close and my siblings weren't around, but there were best friends and people that I relied on to take care of my daughter, trusted friends. So I agree that that's the only way to make it work when you're, you know, I was running my own business as an entrepreneur. So I completely agree with you. Would love to know who influenced you the most in your career, whether it's a family member or a colleague, a friend.
I think the person who influenced me most, not in my career, but in my life, is by far my father. He, at a very early stage, gave me the self-confidence, but in a very realistic way, not in this, oh, honey, you can do anything, go for your passions. No, he didn't say that. What he said was, you can do anything as long as you know what the risks are and you're willing to take those risks. And his favorite line was, any idiot can take a risk with their eyes closed. The trick is to take the risk with your eyes open, knowing the consequences, knowing the price you're going to pay. Understanding all of that and still taking the risk is going to make you a much better player in life. And very often I've thought about that. Okay, what are the prices? What are the risks I'm taking, and what price am I going to pay for them? And am I prepared to pay that price? And if I am, great, I should do it. And if I'm not, no, I should not. I think that my mother also influenced me in a great way by watching her. She didn't have a career. She was a mom at home and a support person for everybody, her children, her husband, her own mother, her friends. And I realized that not having her own career, not having that self-confidence that comes from a paycheck, in fact, didn't make her a happy woman. And I saw her at age 63 when she first got her job.
I remember
ever in life, yes.
Yeah.
And I saw the transformation at the 63-year-old's face and the self-confidence she got from being a barista at Whole Foods. And the joy she got from, you know, getting that acceptance from her customers that she made cappuccinos for. I mean, incredible how jobs can actually give us that missing self-confidence. And, you know, if my mother could do it at age 63, I think most people can.
Absolutely. Well, you had some wonderful role models in your parents, and you share throughout the book. I won't share another story. I want everybody to get this book because the one story about you going to Chicago for school and how you had, there was an incident and you called up your dad thinking maybe he was right. And you were thinking maybe this isn't for me. And he was there and he gave great advice. And I do remember the story about your mom becoming a barista, really powerful. And now it's your turn to give a little bit of parting advice. What can you share with listeners about becoming an entrepreneur in tech or any industry?
Absolutely. And thank you for giving me this opportunity. I think in life, it doesn't matter what we do. It matters how we feel about what we do. And don't let your failures or your successes define you. Because in fact, it's what you do that is going to make you feel good or bad, but ultimately it's not who you are. So if we allow our failures to define us, we're going to feel horrible about ourselves. And if we allow successes to define us, we're going to have this, you know, huge head where we feel we're so invincible. So just keeping that center, keeping the core strong, and knowing that you can always flow forward. You might not end up exactly where you thought you would, but you can always make progress, and tomorrow is going to be better than today. Thank you.
Oh, excellent advice, Magdalena. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and your book?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, Magdalena Yashil. I'm on Twitter, same. And I also have the domain magdalena.com. That's what you get for being so early on the internet. And magdalena.com basically has the different op-eds I have written that have been published in various papers, some interviews, podcasts just like this one, and any other, you know, material, as well as the book. The book's available on Amazon. And you can also listen to it. I narrated it myself, so you will have to listen to my voice for quite a while, but I'm told that it's pretty fun.
I'm sure many will. Magdalena, thank you so much for coming on the show, for sharing your journey, all of your advice. We appreciate your time, and we've learned so much from you today.
Thank you very much for having me. And my parting words are power up.
Yes, power up. And I also want to thank everyone for tuning into Women Worldwide. Until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.